The turnabout in Hannah's heart and life wasn't when God changed her circumstances, but when she poured out her heart to him, right? After she prayed, after she went to God, after she poured out her heart, her whole countenance changed and she was joyful and she was able to eat. This is a woman who's grounded not in the circumstances of her life, but in the very nature of God.
You find yourself leaning on experience to provide you with joy and contentment? How about taking a look at God and trusting and resting in Him for your joy and your contentment? I think after today's broadcast and next week's, you'll find that there's a lot to offer from the throne of all grace. Welcome to Growing in Grace with Pastor Steve Ballantyne from San Gabriel Community Church. We are in 1 Samuel chapter 1, beginning in verse 21 through chapter 2 and verse 11 as we look at Hannah's prayer and lessons to learn along the way. Here's Pastor Steve, today's program.
The man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and to pay his vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, "As soon as the child is weaned, I will bring him so that he may appear in the presence of the Lord and dwell there forever." Elkanah, her husband, said to her, "Do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only may the Lord establish his word." So the woman remained and nursed her son until she weaned him. And when she had weaned him, she took him up with her, along with a three-year-old bull, an ephah of flour, and a skin of wine. And she brought him to the house of the Lord at Shiloh, and the child was young. They slaughtered the bull, and they brought the child to Eli, and she said, "Oh, my Lord, as you live, my Lord, I am the woman who is standing here in your presence praying to the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord has granted me my petition that I made to him. Therefore, I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he is lent to the Lord." And he worshiped the Lord there. And Hannah prayed and said, "My heart exalts in the Lord. My strength is exalted in the Lord. My mouth derides my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation. There is none holy like the Lord. There is none beside you. There is no rock like our God. Talk no more so very proudly. Let not arrogance come from your mouth, for the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. The bows of the mighty are broken, but the feeble bind on strength. Those who were full have hired themselves out for bread, but those who were hungry have ceased to hunger. The barren has borne seven, but she who has many children is forlorn. The Lord kills and brings to life. He brings down to Sheol and raises up. The Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low and he exalts. He raises up the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with princes and inherit a seat of honor. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and on them he has set the world. He will guard the feet of his faithful ones, but the wicked shall be cut off in darkness, for not by might shall a man prevail. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Against them he will thunder in heaven. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to his king and exalt the power of his anointed." Then Elkanah went home to Ramah, and the boy ministered to the Lord in the presence of Eli, the priest. Father, we come before your word this morning with a deep and great longing to understand your word to us, your people. Lord, help us. Help us in communication on both ends, the speaking and the hearing, that we might hear your word that you gave through Hannah to your church this day. In the name of Jesus, amen. Well, many a song has been written about the birth of children. This one, I think we'll see, stands out as being rather distinct, of a song written after the birth of a child. I think it's Celine Dion, A Mother's Prayer is the song. I pray you'll be my eyes and watch her where she goes and help her to be wise, help me to let go. Every mother's prayer, every child knows, lead her to a place, guide her with your grace to a place where she'll be safe. My personal favorite secular song about the birth of a child, Isn't She Lovely? Isn't She Wonderful? Isn't She Precious? Less than a minute old. I never thought that love would be making one as lovely as she. I can't believe what God has done. Through us, he's given life to one. Isn't she lovely, made from love? Now, there's nothing necessarily wrong about the sentiment of those songs. They're singing about child that they love, that they're astonished at, even giving thanks to God for and praying for. But understandably, the focus of all of those songs is the child. The focus of the sentiment is directed toward the child. When we get to Hannah's prayer, Hannah's song, Hannah's poem, her sentiment, her emotion, her thanksgiving is not directed toward the child. Her prayer is not about the child. It is all directed to God. And it makes it quite distinct. Last week, we saw that as we open up the pages of Samuel, the whole nation is in turmoil. They've defined the whole period of the judges as a time when there was no king in Israel and everyone did what was right in their own eyes. They were setting aside the law, setting aside the purposes of God, no concern for the will of God, no concern for worship of God. They allowed false idols in, and the whole country is unstable, it's insecure, it's a decay of morality. There's no leadership that's godly. And on the scene enters this family and this woman named Hannah, and she becomes a kind of a picture of the instability of the nation, the insecurity of the nation, the fruitlessness of the nation is pictured in the very barrenness of her own womb. And she's married to this man who has two wives, and he loves her clearly. This is a man that in the midst of an ungodly generation is devout. He's worshiping. He's offering sacrifices. He's keeping the feast. He loves his wife, but they don't trust God for the provision of a son that's so important to them. And so he takes to himself a second wife. And this one's a piece of work, but she's fruitful. And she's got a whole bevy of kids. And instead of being gracious towards this woman, Hannah, who can't have children, she lords it over her. And so the very act of sacrifice where the portions are given, the allotment is given to each woman and each child, the very blessing of Elkanah, her husband, to Hannah is a stab in her heart because she's not receiving the portion she would receive to distribute to her kids, for there are no kids. And in her brokenness and her hurt and her sorrow, she goes to God and she cries out to God to open her womb and give her her son. And where we end last week is they go home and she has a son and she names him Samuel because the Lord heard her prayer. And that's where we are when we come to verse 21. She turns to God. God answers her prayer. And now she's living with Elkanah still in his house, but with a child. And verse 21 to 24, we see the child with Hannah. And we see Elkanah doing what he does, going up to the house of the Lord to offer his sacrifices, verse 21. But Hannah says, I'm not going to go up with your husband this year because when I go, I'm going to have to give Samuel to the Lord and he's not ready. So I'm going to wait until he's weaned, probably 2, 3, 4 years in that culture. I'm going to wait until he's weaned and then I'll go up and then I will offer him to the Lord. So Elkanah goes up, but she doesn't, and he says, do what you seem best. May the Lord establish his word. And so she remained and nursed him. But when she had weaned him, verse 24, then she took him up with her, along with a bull, an ephah of flour, and a skin of wine. These are the necessary ingredients for a sacrifice to God. And she brought him to the house of the Lord when the child was young. You have to imagine the scene. You have to put yourself in the circumstances of Hannah to understand the heart that she expresses in the coming verses. It's only one verse, but it's been several years, and now she's cared for this child. She's loved this child. She's seen him begin to walk, begin to speak. She's held him night after night, and now she comes to surrender him to the service of the Lord. And I think we can read these stories and think, oh, they're Bible characters. That was easy for them to do. But this is an account of real people. This is an account of a real mom who knows that the day is coming when she's going to have to give back her child. I would imagine some of you have been in a circumstance where you've said something like, Lord, if you'll get me through this, I will never dot, dot, dot. John Madden, the football coach and analyst, was famous for being on an airplane one time that was experiencing a lot of turbulence and praying, God, if you get me through this, I'll never fly again. He never did. Spent the rest of his days as a football coach driving a bus across country to all of the games because he made a vow to God not to get on a plane. People say things like that, right, in the heat of the moment. And how easy do you think it would have been as a mom who prayed a vow like that to have thought over those years, I mean, people say things, God, surely you didn't really mean for me to give my child back. But this is a mom with a son she loved, who instead of finding an excuse not to keep her vow, is headed for the day when she will do exactly what she had promised. And we see in verse 24, this is what she does. She comes with an offering before the Lord. They slaughter the bull in verse 25. She goes to Eli and she surrenders him in service to the Lord. When she comes to Eli, she says, I'm the woman, you remember me? I was standing in your presence. I was the one praying all those years ago and you thought I was drunk. And I told you I wasn't. I was crying out to the Lord in my angst and my anguish. Well, the Lord heard my cries. And the Lord answered my prayer. And he came to me in my affliction. And he gave me this boy, whose name is Samuel. But Eli, I made a promise to the Lord that day that if he gave me a son, I would give him back to the Lord. And so as long as he lives, he belongs to the Lord. Now, there's a play on words here in the original. You have this picture of the Lord giving and Hannah giving back. And I really believe that the reason she's able to do this was not out of obligation to her vow, but a fundamental understanding, as we'll see in her prayer, that Samuel was not hers anyway. She understood that Samuel belonged to God. That he was a gift to her, that he had granted this gift, but ultimately Samuel belonged to the Lord. And so giving him back to the Lord is really just recognizing, God, he's yours anyway, and this is the promise I made. It's a powerful but heartbreaking scene. How will this mom react? How will she respond to this, to such a moment, to such a decision? And chapter 2 is her response. And she responds with a poem, with a prayer, with a song. And on the surface, it doesn't seem to fit the circumstances. In fact, so much so that people say, well, this can't be the prayer of Hannah. These can't be her words. This must be a hymn that was inserted later and applied to Hannah. So is she quoting something or are these her words? Well, I think it's likely both. I think these are the words that come from Hannah's mouth in her prayer. Could they have been words that were the language of a recitation in the tabernacle? Could they have been a psalm that was sung by God's people? Certainly. And she took those words, though, and that theology, and she made them part of her prayer back to God. That's a common thing to do. We do that, don't we? We use the words of the psalmist often to express our prayers to God. God, you are my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? You are the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? I lift my eyes up to the mountains from whence comes my help. Lord, you are my shepherd. Because you're my shepherd, I shall not want. You guide me. You protect me. In fact, Mary's Magnificat is a reframing of Hannah's prayer. She does the same thing centuries later. And so this is at the beginning of Samuel. At the very end of 2 Samuel, David writes a song that picks up on these same themes. And this forms an inclusio, an envelope, a bookending to this whole story. It's a psalm of thanksgiving and praise. It is certainly a response to the Lord for removing her barrenness and granting her a child. But it is so much more than that. It's a recognition that this graciousness she's received, this compassion that she's experienced, is not unique to her. This is who God is. This is what God does. He is a God of compassion. He is a God of grace. He's a God who listens. He's a God who touches our infirmity. And we see in these verses just a beautiful expression of the theological significance of Samuel, his birth, in the heart and on the lips of a godly mother. And it becomes almost immediately apparent that this is not just the normal song, and this is not just about Hannah and Samuel, but this is about something much greater that's happening in the life of the nation of Israel. So I want to look at this song in just three parts. The first is this, the expression of Hannah's joy. We'll see that in verse one, the expression of her joy. And then secondly, we'll see the ground of her joy. That is, the reason for her joy is it's grounded in the character of God. And then thirdly, we see that the ground of future joy is in the providential rule of God, the fact that God is sovereign. So first, the expression of her joy, verse one. Note, the first thing that stands out is the personal pronouns, my, and I. My heart exults, my strength is exalted, my mouth derides, I rejoice. This is intensely personal. That's gonna shift. It's gonna shift to the plural very shortly, but it starts out with this personal expression. Her heart is screaming out to God, rejoicing in God. My heart exalts. Now, when we hear heart, we think emotion. And certainly there's truth to that. But for the Hebrew mind, the heart wasn't just where they feel emotions. The heart was the center of their being. One man called it once our mission control center. It's the heart that dictates everything else. It's out of the heart that we speak. That's the picture. It's the core of her being. And so when she says, my heart exalts, she's saying, at the very core of my being, I am exploding with joy. At the very core of who I am, this is not just an emotional response, but everything within me is shouting for joy to God and praise to God for who he is. It's a powerful picture. She's on the verge of having to leave her boy behind, her toddler behind, the boy she prayed for, the boy she loved and nursed and weaned and cared for. She's leaving him. And she says, in the midst of this, at the core of who I am, I was moved to joy. Can you imagine a more difficult thing for a mom to do? And in the midst of this, she is elated. She exalts God. She worships God. Why? Because the deep joy she feels is not based on her circumstances. We saw this last week, that the turnabout in Hannah's heart and life wasn't when God changed her circumstances, but when she poured out her heart to him, right? After she prayed, after she went to God, after she poured out her heart, her whole countenance changed and she was joyful and she was able to eat. This is a woman who's grounded not in the circumstances of her life, but in the very nature of God. In the midst of the most painful experience she can imagine, her heart rejoices in the Lord. Her horn is exalted. Now that may not sound all that great. What does that mean? But a horn is used as a metaphor for a number of things in Scripture, for provision, for triumph, for power. It can be used to speak of strength, as it is so often in the Psalms and in Daniel. In verse 10, we'll see, this word comes up again. I will give strength to his king and exalt the power of his anointed. And it's not translated this way in the English, but in the Hebrew, it's the same verb or same noun that's used there to speak of the horn of Hannah being blessed. God will bless the horn of the anointed one and raise up the anointed. We're only a few verses, certainly it's been years, but we're only a few verses in the narrative from her crying all the time in anguish, being distressed and weeping. What's happened to her? She's discovered her strength is in the Lord, her hope is in the Lord, and that gives the expression of her lips. My heart, my strength, and then thirdly, my mouth. My mouth derides my enemies. Now, that English translation gives us kind of a wrong idea. To deride means something different in English. The Hebrew word is actually the word enlarge, is probably the best translation. You think, well, That's why they don't use it, because that doesn't make a lot of sense. My mouth is enlarged before my enemies. What does that mean? Well, the picture is this, that her voice is magnified. Her voice is enlarged. Her what she says is made greater in front of her enemies. Now, is she thinking just of Peninnah, the other wife? I don't think so, but certainly that matters in her circumstances, don't you think? This woman that has nagged her and ridiculed her and mocked her and held it over her head. And now, the words that come from the mouth of Hannah are enlarged. They are magnified before her enemies. But notice the next phrase. Why? Because I rejoice in your salvation. So that's the logic. Because I rejoice in your salvation, my voice is magnified before my enemies, before your enemies. It's not just singular, right? It's plural. Hannah's enemies are the enemies of God. It's that picture in the New Testament of pouring hot coals on the enemy's head. Those who would question God and question his goodness. Let me tell you about the salvation that this God offers. Let me tell you about the deliverance of this Lord that I worshiped. And standing right next to her, a barren woman is a son. And so when she rejoices in the deliverance of God, her voice is enlarged before his enemies. The very fact that she worships God declares the joy of her salvation derides the enemies of God. You want to get into a shouting match with the enemy of God? No doubt, don't you think? Two women living in this house, one with all the kids, the other wishing she had kids. The one ridiculing her that Hannah had some opportunities to get into a shouting match with Peninnah. She was tempted probably time and again to vocalize her frustration, to stand up for herself, to speak ill against this woman. How do you enlarge your voice against the enemies of God? You don't get in a shouting match. You don't point at yourself. You don't point at the gift. You point at the giver, and you rejoice in the giver. This is Job, right? All over again. When Satan comes to God and says, hey, he's only worshiping you because he's so blessed. You let me at him and he'll curse you. God says, go for it. Satan does it. What does Job do? The Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. That's the response of the servant after he'd been touched. Though he slay me, yet will I trust him.
And you're listening to Growing in Grace with Pastor Steve Ballantyne from San Gabriel Community Church. If you have questions or comments about the broadcast, maybe you have a prayer request, please reach out to us. We'd love to help out any way that we can. You can reach out to us at 626-656-1000 or stop by our website and drop us an email, sangabrielcommunity.org. If you're looking to join us for worship, we meet at 9 a.m., Sunday school at 10:45, and directions and information again can be found at sangabrielcommunity.org or by simply calling 626-656-1000. By the way, as you stop by our website, you'll find an archive of past sermons available to listen to, information about us, who we are, what we believe, and why. Pastor Steve's blog is available from our website as well, and information about San Gabriel Christian School. Please stop by sangabrielcommunity.org or call 626-656-1000. Please remember, as you contact us, this is a listener-supported ministry. As you link arms with us prayerfully and financially, we are able to continue the ministry here in the greater Los Angeles area. Please consider that as you contact us, won't you? Thank you so much for spending time with us today. We look forward to seeing you next week at this same time for another broadcast of Growing in Grace with Pastor Steve Ballantyne. Growing in Grace is the ministry of San Gabriel Community Church.